Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Welcome back. It's 12 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. There's a little Van Halen bringing us back. We're jumping back into our show with a new friend. Clinton Korver is our guest, ladies and gentlemen. He's a new friend. And along with Ronald Howard, he's written a book called Ethics for the Real World. And Clint is a successful entrepreneur and the founder and CEO of Decision Street, which builds web-based tools to help customers make decisions about their purchasing. And he's our new friend, Clint. Welcome to the show.
Jim, it's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
It's good to have you here, and congratulations to you and Ronald on your excellent book.
Thank you.
It's a very important book on a very important topic, and it's a topic that my audience knows that we've covered quite a bit over the years, and because I think it's very important. I think ethics is something that should be taught in school more. I think it should be taught in K-12. You know, we go to Sunday school, Clint, and we learn, you know, the golden rule and things like that. We learn right from wrong. You tell the truth, don't tell the truth, you know, tell the truth or the other thing. And but I don't think we're really, a lot of people are really prepared for how the business world will test your ethics. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that's exactly right, Jim. As a matter of fact, I think it's one thing to know the right thing to do. It's quite another to be skilled in executing the right thing.
Right. Well, let's talk about that. Give us some examples.
Well, so I think, you know, in the business world in particular, so there's a lot of temptations, if you will, to spin the truth or bend the truth to a customer, that sort of thing. And
you mean justification? You know,
it's like you know, that's where you get yourself in trouble,
right?
Let's say your customers, you know, wants to know, is there any risks associated with your product or service? You know, what do you tell them? Are you mm-hmm. forthcoming with those, or are you not? And I think a lot of people are tempted to not disclose that because they think they're going to lose the customer,
right?
And I. One of the problems there is it's framing the situation as a transaction. And I think if you instead frame it, because it's just a one-time event and you'll never have any other things with this person.
Right.
But if you frame it as a relationship, then I think it becomes easier to do the right thing.
One of my favorite stories is that actually happened to me once. One of my favorite examples about something like this is if a customer calls you and says, I want to buy, Jim, come over. I need some of your stuff. And so you go over there and he says, okay, this is what I need. I bought it from you before and I need it. Can you have it here in 2 weeks? And so now you happen to know that this thing he wants to buy is the old model. The new model is coming out next month.
Oh yeah.
And even though the guy has said, look, I want it in 2 weeks, please. Are you obligated to tell him about the new model? Well, in my opinion, there, you know, there's some question. There could be some for saying, well, the guy said he wanted now, and the new model won't be out till next month. And how do I know he'd even like the new model? Well, based on your relationship thinking, which I agree with, you would say, okay, let me tell you what I know. I'm ready to take your order. Well, write it down. I'll have it delivered in 2 weeks. Make sure you know what I know, and I know that there's a new product coming out. Would you like to know about it? Now let me add a little degree of difficulty, Clint. The month that he calls you is December, and you're being pushed like crazy to close everything out before the end of the year, and you may be on a complete pay plan next year. Now what do you do?
Now you've just set up the rationalization.
See, that's where ethics becomes gray. It's not black or white.
Well, and that's where the temptation happens.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I think one of the challenges here is we get, as we get older, you know, and so in kindergarten, we're so good at these rationalizations. But as we get older, we see other people be successful with them, and so it becomes tempting to use them ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the problem with rationalizations, there's two problems. One is, you know, a month from now, that customer is going to find out the new version comes out, and he may feel deceived.
Right.
And so, you know, in that case, now you've just created, you know, a problem in the relationship. And there's another problem, actually, that shows up, too. It shows up in yourself. Now you begin to create a barrier between yourself and your customer. Because now you've got this deception out there. You now need to maintain that deception. And you also need to, I mean, even if the customer doesn't know there's a deception going on,
mm-hmm.
oftentimes they can feel you backing away from the relationship. They know something funny is you're acting differently.
People don't. These things aren't lost on people, are they? Customers.
No.
They have antennas to pick these things up.
And people are very good at picking up changes in relationships. They often can't tell you why they've changed, but they can tell you that they've changed. So these barriers we create through deception come through loud and clear in ways that we don't anticipate.
So how do we get ourselves established on the right ethical path?
Well, one of the main things that you can do is before you get into an ethically sensitive situation like you just did, come up with your own code for where it is you're willing to basically deceive. Or if you're not willing to deceive at all, be clear about that up front. Because the challenge is when you're faced with that customer situation, it's often a very difficult time to think through your ethics because these situations are time-pressured, they're emotional. Easy to come up with the stories about how it's December and you have to, you know, get this one sale to make your numbers
right,
for the year.
Right.
And so when you're in that situation, it's very difficult to think about what kind of person do I want to be. So
mm-hmm.
I think so.
After the sale is made, the money from the sale has been spent, and I don't even remember how much it was. How will I feel about what I did?
Yeah. Well,
because that has a longer half-life, doesn't it?
When we teach ethics, one of the first things we do is we ask people in the room to describe an ethically sensitive situation they've encountered. And people recall these things from 10, 20 years ago as if it happened yesterday.
Yep. Even though they don't remember how much money they made on the deal. Stand by. Hold on to that thought. We're going to be right back. Clinton Corver, he's the author, along with Ronald Howard, of the book Ethics for the Real World. And we'll talk about this some more and tell you where you can find the book right after these messages. 28. Game. Stay with me. Little Procol Harum bringing us back. A whiter shade of pale. Thank you, Roger. Good job. That's an appropriate music. Rejoining music for our topic today with our good friend Clint Corver. Dr. Clinton Corver is the co-author of, along with Ronald Howard, of the book Ethics for the Real World. I'm Jim Blassingame, the small business advocate, and as you know, I talk about ethics quite a bit on the show before. I have talked about it before many times over the last 10 and a half years, and I intend to continue to do that as long as we can keep finding the really good, really smart people like Clint Corver to help us talk about these things. And you know, Clint, by the way, before we go any further, tell us where we can find your book.
So it's available on Amazon.com. And on June 24th, it'll be available in your local bookstore.
So it's literally being released, folks, even as we speak. So check it out. The title is Ethics and for the Real World, in parentheses, brackets, I guess I should say. Clint, by the way, do you want to give us another website? What about your own website?
Oh, yes. People can find more information out about this at ethics.com.
Okay, sounds good. You know, the story I told you about what happened, that was a real story. That wasn't a fictitious thing. That was a real story. And it did happen in December, and guess how it wound up, what wound up happening from that? The customer wanted two in 2 weeks, and when they found out, when they were given all the information, they said, oh, well, that does change things, but I still want to order two for December, but I'll two for next year too while I'm here.
Yep.
So instead of losing business, the guy doubled his business and he kept the customer for a long time. And the reason I know that story, Clint, was because that salesman was me.
That's a great story.
And it works. Folks, ethics, appropriate ethics, practicing ethical behavior in the marketplace is not only the right thing to do, it not only will help you sleep better and give you a better view in the mirror when you shave in the morning, it's also a best practice. Clint, one of the things that you guys talk about, you have some ethical testing concepts that you talk about in your book, like the other shoe test and the front page test and those kinds of things. Talk to us about some of those.
Yeah, so these are tests for if you haven't created an ethical code that covers the situation you're in, you're confused. There's a couple of tests you can fall back on to figure out if it's the right thing to do or not. So one is called the other shoe test, and basically it's the old question of how would you feel if the shoe were on the other foot and mm-hmm. a customer were treating you this way?
Yep, that's also the golden rule test, isn't it?
It's the golden rule. Kant calls it the test of reciprocity. It's one of the fundamental mm-hmm. tests in ethics,
yep.
though.
Yep.
I mean, a lot of things pointing you in this direction. So a test is called the front page test. So how would you feel if what you just did was now reported on the front page of the Wall Street Journal? Are you okay with that?
All right.
And then you've got another one is the role model test. So would you want your employees or your children to role model your behavior and do the same thing that you're doing?
See, I want to land on this one for a little while because I think this is really important. A lot of the ethical bearing that I have, I actually got from people I worked for. Mm. Most of it was good stuff. Some of it was not good stuff.
Yeah.
Some of the things I learned about being ethical, I learned watching people be unethical.
Oh yeah, there's plenty of that going on.
And my point is you have to pay attention all the time. Even if you're around somebody you don't like, think that they're honest or whatever, just remember that watch that. But I will tell you this though. There's one thing I think we should point out, Clint. You may meet somebody in the marketplace. You may compete with somebody in the marketplace, and they're unethical as they can be. They would. I've known people, Clint, who would tell a lie when it sounded better. and you watch those guys, and you say, "There's no way this guy's going to fail. He's going to fall on his face." Guess what, folks? Somehow they make it.
Yeah.
Ethical people, unethical people, don't always wind up in jail. They often wind up being successful, but that's still no reason to want to follow them.
Yeah, I mean, I sometimes make a distinction between prudential, so that's profit, success, and ethical, which is doing the right thing. And, you know, it's the sort of thing where there are plenty of people that are successful in life, and then mm-hmm. at the end of their life, they look back over what they've done, and it's not a pretty picture.
Yep, yep.
And, I mean, so I'm a small business owner. I've started a number of businesses. And one important aspect for me is, you know, I am and what I've done.
Mm-hmm.
And that counts right up there with profit for me.
Well, the other thing in your role model test, which I like a lot, is the idea of whatever you say your company's values are, if you don't walk that talk with your employees, they've got an antenna that runs up real quick on that too, don't they?
Oh, yeah. And actually, you point out something very important there, which is when you've got values or you're establishing your values, you want to be really careful on those, because if you have one value which is tell the truth, I mean that's, you know, a good solid value, and if you have another one where, say, customer satisfaction comes first, if you don't define that customer satisfaction comes first clearly and it becomes a bit of a squishy value, then all of the values tend to take on a squishy feel.
Mm-hmm. And the next time you establish something for your company, your employees, you know, won't take it as seriously as they would have. The book is called Ethics for the Real World. The co-author is Clinton D. Corver, also Ronald Howard. Hey, thanks for being here. Good job. Will you come back another day?
I'd be delighted to.
And by the way, folks, the books are available wherever books are sold. Thanks, Clint. We'll see you next time. Quick break. Stay with me. I'll be right back.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.